Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Ulster Bank Business Live series in association with our partner, smallbusinesscan.com. Thank you very much for coming this evening. It's a real pleasure to be in this hall. I hope you'll agree with me. I think it's absolutely fabulous. It's the first time I've been in it, it would be perfect if only the signage was slightly better and I'd found it the first time, but absolutely tremendous venue to have here. This particular series of live events is about building greater awareness of the opportunities and the supports that are available for local businesses who are looking at expanding into cross-border international trade. We know it's very tough for local businesses right now. We know domestic demand has reduced, and arguably there's never been a greater need to embrace looking abroad and further afield. We in Ulster Bank want to play our part in supporting the market expansion agenda for local enterprise. So, how are we going to do that? How are we doing it? As the leading business bank in Northern Ireland, we're currently helping our customers export to over 77 different countries across the globe. I'm not going to list them. We're the only domestic clearing bank in the island of Ireland with a global parent bank represented in 37 different countries. We're using trade finance, supply chain finance, FX, cash management solutions, among many others, to support local businesses. And we've helped Irish SMEs export everything from beef, cheese, fish, seed potatoes, tiling robes, pumps, water containers, veterinary products, radar, surveillance equipment, and even tonight, perfume for canines, I've heard someone is going to launch. So you'll have more of that later. And we've seen in Ulster Bank a significant increase in the volume of queries related to how to trade internationally. Consequently, our own global trade finance team has trebled in size over the last 2 years. We've close working relationships with Invest Northern Ireland, Intertrade Ireland, Enterprise Ireland, the Irish Exporters Association, and we share in their determination to support cross-border and international trade. So, in conclusion for me, there's three positives that I want you to take away from this event. First, that there's a lot of experience and knowledge in this room and in the wider business community that you can tap into to help grow your business. Secondly, that advancements in social media and e-commerce are bringing the global market closer to your business. And thirdly, that Ulster Bank has the expertise, connectivity, and products to help your business. So I really hope you enjoy this evening's proceedings, and I'm absolutely delighted to be handing over to Emma Jones. Welcome, Emma. I know Emma had a big event in London yesterday. I'm absolutely delighted that she could be with us in Northern Ireland today. I'm not going to embarrass Emma with her full resume, because I'd be here for a while, but Emma is an author, an entrepreneur, a small business advisor, and many other things, and without further ado, I'd like to welcome her.
I'm all right. Thank you very much, Ian. My first comment is going to be to the panellists, which is I hope you don't mind my back being to you. Many people have said it's the best view. I'm sorry, yes, no rude comment from the back, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, good evening. I'm delighted to be here. As Ian mentioned, Ian didn't mention actually, I run a company called Enterprise Nation, which is a small business support company. So we help people start and grow businesses. And I guess the reason why I'm here this evening, delighted to be here this evening, is that pretty much a year ago this week, because we launched it, actually, did you know it's Global Entrepreneurship Week this week? Okay, so happy Global Entrepreneurship Week to everybody. That this time a year ago, we brought out a book called Go Global, How to Take Your Business to the World. And I also, Ian didn't mention, is this is pretty much our 12-month anniversary, because it was that 12 months ago when I came to speak at an Enterprise Northern Ireland conference that I met Ian and Simon and heard about the great things that Ulster Bank is doing with Small Business Can. So I had written this book called Go Global, which involved research and talking to lots of successful exporters. And in this year's Global Entrepreneurship Week, we've been holding lots of events to help small businesses go global. So as Ian mentioned, we had a conference in London yesterday, which was just fantastic. And the reason why we as a company are really focusing on this at the moment refers back to some of the points that Ian just made. There has never been a more important time for small businesses to look to international markets. Last Thursday, the Prime Minister made some quite grand plans and comments that UK trade and investment has just doubled its target of small businesses it's going to help with exporting. And the Prime Minister had kind of called on the nation, really, to say, start taking your goods overseas. But the two messages I just kind of wanted to leave you with, and just the kind of brief comments that I wanted to make, is exporting is a lot easier than you think it will be. And one of the things, when I did write the Go Global book, as I mentioned, I spoke to quite a few successful exporters, and every single one of them, there's 30 of them profiled in the book, every single one said, you know, I thought this was going to be really hard, but you just pick up loads of stuff on the way. So a girl called Emma Henderson, who's based in Scotland, runs a lovely company called Show Pony, which she imports fair trade bags from India, applies a beautiful, unique print screen design, and then sells them via a very powerful website called Etsy.com. And I said to her, she ran this business. It started off from her back bedroom, essentially. And I said, right, so you're running a global business from your spare room, which is just incredible and is what a lot of people are doing. But I said, how did you find out about the export legalities and the documents you're meant to fill in? She said, oh, the UPS man taught me. And it's kind of little things like that, that if you are entrepreneurial enough, you will find a way to get to know how to do this stuff. So a lot easier than you think it is. But another really important thing to consider in this week and in ongoing weeks is how much technology can help you. And I don't think we've ever been at a point where technology has been so cost-effective and so powerful if you're looking to export. So what technology can help you do is promote yourself. So again, we refer to this in Go Global, but five websites, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, YouTube, and which was the other one? Google, no, or another site. Five websites give you access to 982 million people. So through those five websites, which cost you nothing to be on, but a little bit of time, you can get access to 982 million potential customers. One of the guys that we had speak at the event yesterday is a man called Tony Curtis, who came up 2 years ago with an idea to create heated gloves. His son was playing rugby, his son came off the rugby pitch, and as he beautifully said yesterday, stuck his hands up his dad's jumper and said, oh, Dad, I've got cold hands. So Tony Curtis thought, this is really weird, there must be a product of heated gloves. Researched, no, there wasn't such a product. Anyway, he beautifully, eloquently said to us yesterday, I was just a man with an idea, and he is now about to sell these gloves all over the world. But he found distributors on Facebook. So at no charge, and in fact, he spoke very well about this in terms of how he started, grown this international business on a budget of less than £7,000, because he begged, stealed, and bartered his way through incredible business that he started. So websites such as those can help you promote yourself, incredible things that you can do, mini video clips that you can take. In fact, Gary, who just videoed me earlier this evening, I don't know if he's still here, said a lovely thing in terms of, he said, I help small businesses capture their message and put it into video form. And he said, because you know what? When you put video up on the web, you come higher in search results when people are looking for what you do. Because Google now owns YouTube, and even though they don't publicly say it, it means you'll come higher up in the search results if you've got clips on YouTube of what it is that your company makes. So customer testimonials, images of you making or doing what it is that you do, incredible as to how you can get known across the web. So you can use technology to promote yourself. Again, Twitter, I know small business can, and Chris Harrison used Twitter incredibly well. An essential tool, I think, now for small businesses. But also, you can use websites to sell, and I'm sure we'll be picking this up in kind of the panel sort of questions later on. But whether you're selling business services or products, there's incredible websites. I've mentioned Etsy.com, which you may know is a huge website. They've got about 4.5 million sellers on it now, selling handmade goods all over the world. If you're selling business services, there's a website called Elance.com that's actually just moving into Europe. So if you're a videographer, a copywriter, a lawyer, an accountant, you upload your profile and Elance.com finds customers for you from all over the world. Our big sponsor of our Go Global activities this week is a website called Alibaba.com. Okay, crikey, lots of people know that then. So Alibaba is China's largest trading website. Oh, lovely. Sorry, I've been waiting for that to happen all night. Is that my eyesight or did the lights just dim? Lovely. Oh, I feel as if I can speak quietly now. Alibaba.com is an incredibly powerful site. You can source and sell supplies from Asia. And again, yesterday, I'm sorry to keep on referring to this, but it's very fresh in my mind. We had this wonderful lady, who I keep on calling her the most glamorous woman I know in Lewes, because this woman called Kate Kersall came up with a product called Bog in a Bag, which is a fishing stall with a disposable bag in it. And as you can imagine from the name Bog in a Bag, it's very popular with fishermen and campers and lots of other people. Anyway, she sourced her supplies from Asia, and she quite openly says without Alibaba, she wouldn't be in business because she couldn't find a manufacturer in the UK to produce to the specification that she wanted. But she's now using Alibaba.com as a site to sell her goods all over the world. So sites such as Etsy, eBay, of course, we all know of. And we had a guy from eBay talk yesterday, and he said 90% of eBay sellers are now selling overseas just because you can, because they're attracting the customers on your behalf. So Elance, Etsy, Alibaba, all these websites at your disposal. So technology to help you promote yourself, technology to help you make sales, and then, of course, there's payment. When we wrote Go Global, one of the most incredible things I think about exporting is almost the myths that exist around exporting. So it will be too expensive, I won't get paid, I won't be able to speak the foreign language, I won't understand the culture in those certain markets. And now you can almost take every one of those, what I call myths, and bust them with technologies that exist. So I won't get paid. RBS WorldPay now exists, so you can get paid safely and securely. I won't understand the language. Google Translate, which is a free tool, is absolutely brilliant as a way of getting immediate translation. I won't understand the culture. There's a great website called Quintessential, where you can learn all the cultural etiquette of dealing in different countries. So technology that is now at our disposal, as I say, most of those sites I've mentioned are either free of charge or you only pay based on making sales. So it has opened up, as Ian said, the web has opened up a world of opportunity. And just to finish, in terms of why it's so important now, flat domestic market, we've got good exchange rates. The Eurozone is in a little bit of trouble, which is why sites such as Alibaba do help you get out to the Asian and other developing nations. So there's never been a better time to harness what's at our disposal, to go global, and as Ian mentioned, to kind of leverage all the support that's in this room from the likes of Small Business Can and Ulster Bank. And hopefully that's maybe set the scene for what Finn is now going to do. So thank you very much. Thank you.
Emma, before we start, you talked about talking to people who are saying that exporting is a lot easier than they expected. One of the big things we have to change really is the mindset of SMEs and business owners. There seems to be, you know, I'm in a comfort zone, I'm selling in my local marketplace, and as you said, there's always these obstacles to selling abroad. I don't understand the culture. So if we change that mindset, I'm sure we're going to start, you know, making the progress we need to get SMEs exporting.
Absolutely.
Okay. Hello, everyone. First of all, I will try and speak very slowly because I'm from Cork, and I know that if I start speaking too fast, just put your hand up and say you have no idea what I'm talking about. We were here last year, and we had about 120 startups in Belfast, and we ran 14 events around the country focusing on startups. This year we're starting off in Belfast, and we're having 14 events on the island where we're focusing on getting a bit of growth into our businesses. And the only way we're going to get growth into our businesses, or one of the key ways, is if we start thinking about selling internationally. Whether it's here in the Northern Ireland, selling down south, or selling into England, Scotland, Wales, or even further beyond. Okay. If anybody's on Small Business Can, which is the site I am involved with, you'll know that our whole ethos is it's about conversation amongst business people, it's about sharing insights, it's about talking about the practical things that we need to do in order to grow our businesses. So tonight I have four business people who are all out there doing it, and we're going to talk about real experiences that they found selling into international marketplaces. It's a very loose agenda, as usual. We're going to talk under the what I call the 4M pillars of growth: money, marketing, management, and motivation. Okay. The key thing tonight is that what we want you to go away with is with the feeling that, you know, you're not in this by yourself. I say it at every event. When we started Small Business Can, we did it on the basis that, you know, business people think they're on a long, lonely journey. They're not. There's thousands of people all willing to share advice and successes, share their contacts, so that you get a sense that you're not by yourself if you partake this journey to sell abroad. The second thing we'd like you to go away with is you might pick up one snippet of an idea from these conversations tonight. And if you all go away with one idea that you can implement in your business, we're going to do 14 of these. There'll be 1,400 businesses all introducing one solid idea into their business. And that in itself is probably a great initiative. Okay? The last thing I will say to you is, please ask questions. Okay? I don't want anybody here leaving tonight saying, I should have asked that question. There is no question that is stupid, believe me. Right? The only reason that people don't ask questions is if they feel embarrassed, and nobody should feel embarrassed amongst our peers here tonight, because we're all in this together. Okay? I'm going to ask each of the panelists to introduce themselves, and then we're going to kick into the conversation. So can I start off with the lady on my left? Tell us who you are and what you do, please.
Thank you. My name is Kate Marshall. I'm a partner in a training company called Mast Ireland. We've been operating for 30 years across all of Ireland. We do a little bit in Scotland, a little bit in North America as well. We have three areas that we work into. One is leadership management development. The other one is personal skills and developing those. And the final one is business development. So we work with our clients, helping them find new ways to develop their business.
Okay, thank you. Michael?
Okay, Finn, my name is Michael Jenkins. I'm owner of a business called Up and Running ANI Limited. And also another events business called Run Run Run. 7 years ago, we were the first running specialist shop to open up on the island of Ireland. We've always had an all-island mentality with the slogan, Keeping Ireland Running. We've had great success in the first six and a half years, and our new growth strategy is very much looking executing a lot more opportunities across the island of Ireland. Our events include the Belfast Telegraph Run Her. I created and own the Run Her brand with some very interesting opportunities with that across the UK and Ireland and Europe. And a new event we've put into County Kerry called the Wild West Run. So very much all about running.
Okay. Okay. I'm looking forward for this man telling you what he does. Off you go, Dennis.
My name is Dennis Kelly, and my company is urbanpup.com. And believe it or not, we actually sell dog clothes and dog accessories, collars and leads. We sell dressing gowns. We sell socks, pajamas.
Perfume.
Gold necklaces. Well, you name it, we sell it. We're internet retailers, and we're based in Bangor. And we actually don't sell very much into the local market. Our market would be 50% GB, and the other 50% would actually be worldwide. Earlier this year, we started a wholesale division to our business, and probably within the last 8 months now, we've about 120 shops we supply. Again, probably about a third would be in GB, and then the other two-thirds would be probably Germany, France, Italy, Spain would be our main markets.
Wherever they like dogs.
Yeah, but they like dogs.
Tony?
Yeah, and my business isn't just as exciting as big, boring engineering equipment, but nevertheless, it generates a bit of employment and a bit of fun for myself and hopefully everybody that works for us. I set the company up myself in 1983, and we started out working in a completely different business and ended up where we are now, making quarry and mining equipment. And we export it all over the world. We have a factory in India, we have offices in Dubai, Doha, Calcutta, Bangalore. We've an office in Brazil, and we have people operating in Turkey. I can't name them all, but we've direct employees, and we work through dealers. It's a tough game. It's all about export, and we sell not nothing in Ireland, but very little in Ireland. Few opportune things that occur, and you would think in our industry, the industry we have in Ireland is essentially to supply people for the construction industry, and we have actually sold quite a bit this past 3 years, not quite, but maybe 10% of what we were doing in 2007. So even if we had to survive, we could survive in Ireland on a very, very small scale, but we still would survive. So but the exporting is 95% of our business all over, wherever it takes us.
Tony, when you set up in 1993, what was in your background that you were setting up a business that was going global from day one? Who'd you work for?
I worked for Powerscreen in Dungannon after I qualified as an engineer, and I was one of their design engineers, and I always wanted to work for myself. I never really wanted, but in 19, 1983, sorry, whenever I qualified, there was it was pretty much the same as it is now. There was very few jobs about, and it was very... I had a car repair business, and I had a number of things, agricultural contracting, but it just wasn't enough to keep the lifestyle that I was intending to go for, you know. So I got a job in Parscreen and travelled a good bit of the globe, which sort of taught me, you know, not to be afraid to get in an airplane. I tell a story about being in Houston, Texas, and I was asked to go on ahead to Australia to look at some projects out there, and I had no credit card because at that stage I didn't have a credit card. I had no money, and my flight was at 6 o'clock tomorrow night, and I was hungry and nowhere to stay, but I had to go. And I noticed a guy coming back with a trolley, the airport trolley, and he slid it up this thing against the wall, and at the end a quarter fell out of it. So I went and to the car park and dragged all the shopping trolleys back with me, pushed them in and got $20 and fed myself. So that was 80 trolleys. So yes, you can export, but you have to be as tough as hell, you know. So.
What about you, Dennis? There's not a big market for dressing dogs in Northern Ireland, is there?
No, there's not. When we looked at this at first, we realised there was like a huge market. I think last year now in GB, just for our products, it was £450 million spent. And in the States, there was $8 billion spent. But when we looked at Northern Ireland, there was very little. And we didn't think even the culture was particularly right here for somebody to be walking down the street with a dog wearing a dress. So we started back to front. We didn't start even looking at our home market. We started looking at overseas markets right away. 50% of our stuff's going into GB and 50% is going worldwide. And as I say, that's the way we started. We started back to front.
But did you had a background where you were buying and selling internationally before you set up Urban Pup?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, prior to Urban Pup, I had a business actually where I used to import used cars from Japan. And it would require me going to Japan sort of every 3 months. And we used to go to Japan and then go around to various auctions, Tokyo and Osaka and different cities. And the way it had to work was used to have to buy a batch of cars in Japan. They were sitting in the dock in Japan. You would have had a batch of cars then sort of on the boat on the high seas. And then you had another batch of cars here that you were actually in the business of selling. And all the cars, I would have brought them from Japan, and the cars would have came to here, but again, would have all went to GB. But in Northern Ireland, there was a thing, in the UK, there was a thing called the single vehicle test. So you couldn't export your cars from Japan straight into Southampton. The way we used to do it was we used to export them from Japan into Dublin, where there was no single vehicle test, but they were into the EU. So once they were in the EU, that was it, they were in, and then we could bring them over the border into the UK. MOT'd them in Belfast, put them on the boat and straight back over to England and skipped the single vehicle test. It was sort of a long way around, but there was great money in it. So there was.
Until they closed the loophole.
Until they closed the loophole. The manufacturers hated it. Sure so they did. The car manufacturers absolutely hated it because they were flooding in like thousands and thousands of cars every month. And they were actually second-hand car sales were really getting hit hard, and even new car sales. So the first thing they actually did was they put pressure on the insurance companies to make it very difficult for you to insure a Japanese imported vehicle. And then the second thing was, the final nail in the coffin was the government introduced the single vehicle test in the Northern Ireland. So if you brought the cars into Dublin and then into Belfast, you still had to do the single vehicle test. So that was that.
That's government for you, huh?
Isn't it? Yeah. Gets in the way of everything.
Kate, your story is different insofar as you've kind of, you've taken the island of Ireland and just decided to concentrate on the closest market, which is the Republic. Tell us how you did that.
Well, the business was set up 30 years ago, and initially it was Frank Stores set it up, and Frank was an Englishman actually, living here in Northern Ireland, and just saw the opportunity. And the reason the opportunity was there primarily even in those days was clearly Dublin was attracting large corporates. It was attracting the type of client that he felt that he could service in at that time with Mast Ireland. So from the get-go, our opportunity was very much all Ireland. And even today, 70% of our business would be in the greater Dublin area. And for many reasons, a lot of work that we do is with the corporates, and they're still down there and they're still operating. We work obviously here as well in the north, but We see it very much as an all-Ireland business and always have done from the very beginning.
Okay. Would you have a similar approach?
Yeah, very much so. We established the up-and-running Belfast store March 2005. At the same time, I decided to punish myself and go back to university. I did a Master's in Marketing and Entrepreneurship. And I was sitting in the class, University of Ulster. Suddenly, I had that sort of listened to different lecturers. I suddenly felt that a more sort of expansive approach would be better for my business. So from the day we opened the doors, we very much looked at the whole island. So all our communications were talking to the whole island. And one thing we did was we set up a running forum, talkback forum. And within 1 year, it was the biggest running forum in Ireland and the second biggest in the British Isles. And within that alone, we have 1,500 members who I call my marketing department. And they tend to sort of give advice out to anyone in running, walking, fitness, injuries across the island of Ireland. So very much my original business plan was to have one shop in the north of Ireland and do be successful at that. But having the fortune of doing a Master's in Marketing and Entrepreneurship opened my eyes up to a much more aggressive all-Ireland sort of perspective.
Okay. Again, if anybody's any questions, it doesn't necessarily have to be on topic, but if you know, don't go away. If you have a question, ask it. And there's no, we're happy to go off on tangents. So if you have questions, put your hands up. Here we go.
Yeah, I didn't. For the first couple of years, I did a lot of work in the water industry, and in that was changing. I got a lot of contracts changing sand and water filters. So a lot of the water authorities used sand, but there was very little sand available that was in the right format for using in water treatment. So I designed some equipment to take natural sand that occurred here in Ireland and turn it into the more valuable filter sand, and we extended that to golf courses and things like that. And then just in sort of 1998, we got some inquiries. We set up a website, actually, in 99, and we started to get some inquiries coming through for specialist sand production. And one of the first people to contact us was a Pakistani company who were looking to make a filter sand material. And the guy just, you know, we got a hit, and then you'd got an email from someone, and then you would have looked at it and then sent them back a, you know, a question, or just asked them what was their sand like, what did they want, how many tons did they want, and what water supply they had got. And that would have bounced back an answer, or not. If the answer didn't come back, you knew there wasn't a real thing behind it. But this guy kept pinging and pinging and pinging until eventually he went quiet, and I said, well, that's the end. I actually gave him a quote and all, and went quiet. And then about a month later, but Mr. Tony, I have got to, he called me on the phone. Mr. Tony, yes. And he said that, I am ready to do the letter of credit with you now. And I said, Lord, yeah. I said, and how did you get the confidence, at the end of the conversation, I said, how did you get the confidence to place the order with us? Well, we have people in London, and they sent people to Belfast to suss you out, and they said you are a reputable company. And he sent people, but that's what he said. He got the Pakistani intelligence service to suss us out and see if we were for real. Seriously, that's what happened. And we got our letter of credit, and we sent a machine out to Karachi, and it was installed and is working to this day. So
what was your first customer?
Oh, for machinery. Crea Concrete, probably, in Draperstown, and different people down south, Roadstone, Ready Mix, Ireland.
And how did you then go beyond the island? Like, where did you go next?
I suppose the website was, it was probably as crude. I'd love to see it today. I'd love to bring it up today. It'd probably look as crude as hell, but it managed to get some hits, you know, and it was done by a guy from Cookstown, a great guy, Paul Conway. And he started working for us, and he was your arty farty brochery type guy, and that was how we looked at it. He didn't do drawings and Titan poles, so he wasn't any good. But he was a great guy, and he generated more work for us than you wouldn't believe, just because he had this flair just to be able to, and like, we didn't know what spiders and Google and all that stuff was. I remember seeing Google for the first time, wondering what the hell it was, you know. But that was the basis. It was so probably crude as hell, but it worked. Just got a few hits, and And we still do that to this day. But I probably knew some guys from the Power Screen days who would have known me and might have put an odd call out to them. Maybe they called me, I don't know. But probably I called them, told them what I had, and an odd inquiry would have came from them. And, you know, a lot of the time you'd get